Sports betting, it's on everyone's mind right now, and Sports Interaction is Canada's sportsbook. Before the game starts, live and play, or maybe you could just guess how your favorite player is going to perform. Canada plays at SIA, doing it right since 1997. With the most competitive odds, Sports Interaction makes it easy to deposit, play, and cash out. Head over to sportsinteraction.com/STP. That's sportsinteraction.com/STP. 19 plus, play responsibly. Hey, welcome to Age of Provocateur, Al Walsh, Adam Wilde. Exciting time of year. This is the regular season's winding down. This is going to be a great episode because Boko Imam is joining us. Alan, I know we're going to get into a lot of your relationship with him and his story and everything, but if you could sum up Boko in a couple of sentences, what would you say people are in for with him?
Well, I think you're going to get a sense of the kind of character he has, the respect that he garners in every dressing room he's ever been in, and really around the league. The last 5-6 days, I have received so many messages from players in the NHL who haven't even met him, who have said, hey, give Boko my best. Congrats on the call-up and playing his first NHL game. This guy is universally loved and respected by everybody, but really from the guys that he's played with in the past, guys he played with in Ontario, guys he played with in junior. I'm getting messages so happy for him. You know, he's 25 years old, playing his first NHL game. There seems to be, it's more in hockey than in any other sport. If you don't play you get to the NHL and start playing by 22 or 23, you're somehow washed up and over the hill and you're never going to make it. Whereas in other sports, you're just coming into your own at 25, and lots of players, athletes come into the pro leagues at that age. Hockey's always been more on the younger side of breaking in. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of rare for a guy 25, 26 to be playing their first NHL game anyways. So in that respect, I think that just across the league and across the world of the people that he's interacted with, come into contact with, played with, guys who've coached him, everyone's just so happy for him and his family that he's made it.
So we're going to talk to him in a couple minutes here, and we'll get into his whole story, which is an amazing one. He's a fighter, real fighter. And it's kind of perfect that he's a client of yours, Alan, because that's sort of what you're known for, is fighting for people. It's great. So I think, you know, as the season winds down, you got, at least from the outside, you've got two types of clients at this point, Alan. You've got the clients that are going to the playoffs and the clients that aren't. So what is your job as an agent at the end of the season? Do you have responsibilities? Do you need to get around? What's on your schedule right now?
So I've tried to get around the last couple of weeks and see guys face to face who are likely or who are not going to make the playoffs. Mm. And sort of have meetings wrapping up the season. Checking in on their contracts. Some guys have a year left, 2 years left. Other guys are approaching, whether it's restricted free agency with arbitration rights, restricted free agency without arbitration rights, unrestricted free agency, start to put a plan in place for the summer. Mm. And also at the end of every season, there's a process that players go through. There's medicals. So you need to really interact with your clients on if they have any lingering health issues that need to be highlighted on their end of season medical forms, mm-hmm. that they sign off on. If you don't include any injuries at that time on that form, there are some legal implications that might come to play in the future by that information not being there. Mm. So you're giving players reminders about all that, making sure everybody's up to date on their per diem and that there's no trailing payments. There's a time period at the end of the season where if you don't assert a benefit that has not been received, you could lose it.
Okay.
So you want to check in on all of that. There's always a end of season exit interview where players sits down with the coaching staff and the general manager. And I always want to sit down with the player and talk about their exit meetings before they head to the summer, head back home. Some players want to stay in their club city for a couple of weeks. Some players want to go back right away. Some players are going back to Europe. Some players are going, you know, back to Canada. So there's a lot of logistical, busy work to be done. Some of it is very important, actually, especially when it comes to exit interviews and medicals and so forth. But it's a busy time, and that's why I like to get in front of those guys before the end of the season.
And, you know, that's got to be pretty intimidating, sitting in front of your all of your bosses. So you've got the coach and the GM. Going into those meetings, do you tell players anything? Is sort of like, hey, want to flesh this out? How do you prepare them for that?
Well, we talk about it first. You know, how was the season? Mm-hmm. What are the likely questions that they're going to be asked? What they might want to share with a coach or a general manager or not share. Mm-hmm. So sure, players don't go in programmed in any way, but certainly I have a detailed discussion with the player about, okay, we're here now. What's our short-term goals for the summer and for the beginning of next year? And sometimes there's family implications. Is a player single? Is he 22 years old? 23 years old? Is he married with three kids? Mm-hmm. And at the end of a contract, is he in the middle of a contract? So those are all things that you sit there and talk about. You know, here's where we're at. Here's where I see it going in the summer. Here's where I see things next year. Where do you see things? Mm. You know, does this meet with your goals? What do you want? And it's a great time to check in and visit with each other on those really important issues.
I was tagged in a few tweets this week about a specific team in the Pacific Division that may or may not have surprisingly missed the playoffs. And a lot of people are sort of reaching out and saying, I wonder if Alan has any comment on said specific team. So I have to ask the question before we get to BoCo. Alan Walsh, do you have any comment?
What team are you talking about?
I believe they are called the Vegas Golden Knights.
Ah, Vegas.
There's some history there.
It's almost, to me, comical how many people think that I'm not cheering for Vegas or somehow happy that they haven't made the playoffs. I'm getting messages on Twitter. Some people have sent text messages. The truth is, I represent Max Pacioretty, and Max Pacioretty is a key player on Vegas, and I want him to succeed. Whatever's happened in the past, everybody's moved on. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've moved on. Flowers moved on. He's in a great place. He's heading to the playoffs for the 16th consecutive season. And we're not looking back at Vegas and saying, oh, we're so happy they haven't made the playoffs. I'm actually kind of sad for Max. Mm-hmm. That there isn't going to be any playoff hockey right now in Vegas. I'm sorry for Max. I'm sorry for the fans. Mm-hmm. I'm too busy and I got too many things going on to spend energy wishing ill on anybody else, especially NHL franchise.
Fair enough. Well thought out and a very pointed answer. I think the one thing I will say is one of the first conversations you and I had, we talked about Marc-Andre Fleury and we talked about the belief that he has in himself And seeing what he has done in Minnesota, especially the last 10 games, which he's just been on fire. Unbelievable. I wondered if, because you told me at the time when we talked last summer, he had just won the Vezina Trophy. You said, Marc-Andre Fleury, one thing I can tell you about him is he would never not bet on Marc-Andre Fleury. What do you say to, you know, he's picked up, he's moved again, he's been traded, and he's been on fire, and he's going to the playoffs. What do you say about Marc-Andre Fleury now, Al?
Well, I would say the same thing. He has always believed in himself. And from the time that I first met him, when he was 15 years of age, he's had he makes you feel happy and joyful being around him.
Yeah.
And the one thing I hear about everywhere where he's played is how much joy he brings to a dressing room, whether it was Pittsburgh or Vegas, even in his brief time in Chicago. I think he really made an impact on the dressing room and on the community. The fans loved him. And I went to a game after he was traded to Minnesota, and I'm seeing all these Fleury Chicago Blackhawk jerseys everywhere in the crowd. And I'm like, oh my God, like there were more Fleury Blackhawk jerseys than any other player. I mean, they must have been selling them by the second. I don't know. But to see Mark now again, mm-hmm. facing a new challenge in a new city, getting to know players, he really doesn't have anybody on Minnesota that he's played with previously. So he's got like his whole repertoire of practical jokes and pranks that he's recycling again through a bunch of new guys.
The greatest hits.
The greatest hits. Like, here we go again. Right. So he's excited for the playoffs. He's looking forward to it. And I think all of last year kind of played the whole season with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. It meant a lot to him to win the Vezina, and it wasn't just given to him. Mm-hmm. He earned it. He yeah. was the best goalie in the NHL last year. And I think now the chance to go on another run in the playoffs with a new team is really exciting for him.
Well, congratulations to him. Pass on our best. We hope he rejoins us at some point. And in the meantime, shall we get to Boko and Mama?
Let's do it. Welcome to another episode of Agent Provocateur. I'm Alan Walsh with Adam Wild. How are you, Adam?
I'm great, Alan. I am very excited for today.
We are here today with our guest. Our guest is 25 years old, born and raised in Montreal, played his junior hockey for most of his junior hockey career with the St. John Sea Dogs in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, where in his last year of junior hockey, he scored 41 goals. 41. He was drafted in 2015 in the sixth round by the Tampa Bay Lightning. He was traded to the LA Kings organization, where he signed and played in Ontario in the American Hockey League. He was then traded to the Arizona Coyotes, where he's played in Tucson, and recently has come up to play his first NHL game with the Arizona Coyotes, scoring a goal in his second game against St. Louis. A big welcome to the show, Boko and Mama.
Yeah.
How's it going, Boko? Alan, that was a great presentation. You impressed me there.
And just so that everybody knows, Boko, you and I work together. I've been your agent now for about a year and a half.
Yes. So happy to have joined the family, and it's been great working with Alan. Yeah, for about a year now. That was our first full season together.
Yeah. And we've had some fun together, and you've really made some great strides in your career. Let's talk a little bit about where it all began in Montreal, my hometown, your hometown. Why don't you talk a little bit about growing up in Montreal and some of your minor hockey experiences in Montreal?
Yeah, I mean, every kid that grew up in Montreal know how magical this city is, especially if you're a young hockey player. Just everything, it's around hockey. And I just had so much great memories with all the hockey friends that I had along the way. And playing hockey in Montreal was just so the best. And to keep playing today, it's even more amazing.
So how did you start?
Yeah, so I started when I was about three, four years old, just like every other kids. But I was playing every sports. I was into basketball. I played soccer. I played football. I played baseball. So I was just all over the place. My dad was actually just taking me everywhere. And then hockey was in the mix too. And hockey is the one that stuck.
And who did you play for minor hockey in Montreal?
Yeah, so minor hockey in Montreal, I played for NDG. So it was NDG hockey. That's where I grew up in that neighborhood over there. So I forgot what was the name of my team at the time. But they're still over there, the whole association.
And were there other people of color playing hockey with you back then?
So from what I remember, I did have a few teammates in minor hockey that, players of color. And some years it would just disappear. You will just never see them again for maybe, 4 or 5 seasons. And then you will see, you'll have the chance to see another one. So, yeah. So it's been kind of like that throughout my career.
Did you experience any racism when you were younger and playing minor hockey?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I can't really go back on a lot of experience, but it's just the feeling, and I just remember how I felt. You know, like I said earlier, I was playing different sports. You know, and in football, there was a lot of players that looked like me, and so in the football atmosphere, it was just more organic for me, I would say. But when I was more into the hockey world, for sure, it was, a lot of obstacles. Sometimes it was a little bit challenges to, be the only person of color and just to feel that you're the only person of color in a room too.
So you and I had a conversation earlier in the year, and you told me something that stayed with me, and I've thought about a lot since you said it. When I was a kid growing up, the hockey arena was my safe place, sanctuary. All the problems of a little kid that, my parents divorced when I was young. There was some turmoil back home in the house. And I always felt when I went into the hockey arena, I was entering my safe place. And you made a comment to me about how when you went into the hockey arena, you were leaving your safe place and going into a place that wasn't safe. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So I love that question, Alan, because we did talk about that, and it's funny because it's a little mix of both. So as much that when I was on the ice and actually doing what I like, which was playing hockey, I did feel safe. Me skating, passing the puck, being with the boys, and just doing all that. But I knew that, I might get called something. I was always worried that like something may happen that day, someday, some weeks, some months, I would get lucky and just, have 5 months in a row where, I didn't get called anything or nothing has happened. But I knew that at some point it would have come back. So it was a little bit mix of both. So I did enjoy being in that atmosphere, but I also knew that it may come with a price.
And you ended up moving on to play in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. At what time of your life did you set your sights on becoming a professional hockey player and start thinking about the NHL as a realistic goal, as opposed to just the dream that we all have when we're all kids playing hockey?
Yeah, I will think it's, when I got drafted, when I was, 18 years old, my 16-year-old season, which I was a rookie, I didn't even think I would even going to make the team. I think the team that drafted me was Big Homo. And at that time, they had so many first-round picks. I was a fourth-round pick, and I was a 16-year-old, and they were keeping just a certain amount. But they decided to keep me. They saw something good in me, obviously, physically. I think it gave me an edge, for sure. But even when all that stuff was happening, for me, it was really at 18. When I got drafted, and got to put on an NHL jersey for the first time, that's when I knew that, I was going to give my all, and I just never looked back since.
How did you find out you got drafted by Tampa?
So I was at the draft actually myself. So my mom was there with me and my sister. And I still remember it like it was yesterday. And I remember when the sixth round was starting, I remember having great conversations with Tampa, and they're the one that told me that I should actually show up to the draft. And I remember when the sixth round started, Tampa had two picks late in the rounds too. And I told my mom, I think one of those picks is going to be me. And when they were about to announce it, as soon as they said the St. John Sea Dogs, because the Sea Dogs had a lot of prospects that could have got drafted that year. But even though it could have been the Naughty Sea Dog, I knew it was my name, and it was, and it was just such a great day.
So you ended up going to a development camp with Tampa after getting drafted. That was your first time being around an NHL team with other players who were drafted, meeting NHL coaches, getting on the ice. What was that whole experience like?
So actually, Al, when I did the development camp for Montreal when I was 17. I was undrafted that year.
That's right.
I got an invite. But still, the one in Temple was as special also. And just to be around that atmosphere and to see the NHL veterans and the coaches and the whole setting and everything that's going on behind the scene, it just feels, I remember feeling it, and it just a feel. I just wanted to be in that environment so much. It was obsessive, pretty much. So it just gave me that motivation.
What did you learn from the development camps? What were the big takeaway for you from your first and second experiences going to those camps?
Just about being pretty much a pro, because I feel like you're going through all those things at a really young age, but there's a lot of things in life that we don't even know about. But to be around the older people, get guys with they have family at home, see how they handle their self, their career. It's all that stuff that just helps. It's not just being a hockey player on the ice. It's way more than that. So to be in an environment like this, it was just so much beneficial for a young player.
Yeah. Adam, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I'm curious, Boco, and I'm going to rewind here to your to the draft day for a second here, because you were with your mom and your sister. I'm just curious about, do you remember what they said to you immediately after? Do you remember those moments? Like, do you remember what happened when they said St. John Sea Dogs? Did you even get to hear your name, or did you just know? I want to know kind of how that was for you.
Yeah, I think I did hear my name. Probably like just the first letter, and then my name is so much different from the rest of all the hockey players out there. So I just knew it was me. And then, yeah. And I'm just remember seeing Steve Yzerman just standing there and telling me, you know, welcome to the team and all that. I was just as starstruck and at the same time, so, you know, happy for myself. It was just so much feelings going on. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty overwhelming walking up to the legend that is Steve Yzerman and shaking his hand and taking a jersey and all of those things too. That's got to be a lot.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely, but that's what it's all about too.
Mm. Now, when you were growing up, did you have a player that you emulated or modeled your game after?
I would say yes, for sure. Like Jerome Iginla, obviously, you know, he was he's a legend. And obviously being a player of color, Vinny LeCavalier, when I was at that time, being a young kid playing minor hockey in Montreal, he was like, he was a legend himself. You know, he was having those good years with Tampa Bay, but you know, obviously those guys are all Hall of Famer goal scorers, you know, unlike me. But yeah, they were still two players that I really enjoy watching younger.
Yeah, well, 41 goals in St. John in the queue are a lot of goals. You were inside the top goal scorers of the league.
Yeah, so for sure it was, you know, looking back at it, for sure a great accomplishment for me and for my career. And yeah, going back in that year, you know, I just remember we had the team to win it all that year. And it was also a proving year with Tampa Bay. I was trying to sign, you know, my first professional contract. And yeah, so I think that was the year for me to prove how can I say that?
prove that you were great.
Yeah, I would love to say that, but just to prove that I can bring more than the physical aspect. So to put up 40, well, I was even with 20, I was happy, but to go to 40 was just a huge accomplishment.
And what's interesting about that too is your playoff success. You had 17 points that year in 18 playoff games, and that, you know, that means a lot.
Absolutely, and I think that's when I play my best, when the stake is higher and everything, and yeah, in playoffs everything was going good too. Obviously, we won the championship, and it was just a great overall year.
So in the last week, you've been called up to the NHL and you've played 3 NHL games. There's another game tomorrow. Tell us what it felt like when you got the call and you knew that you were going to play your first NHL game. What was that like?
It was the best feeling of my life. Best feeling of my life for sure. You know, the moment you get the call and you hang up and you process everything that's going on, it's like you're not really there, right? You're just still processing everything. But then that was pretty quick. I was pretty quick to come back to my senses, since just to be, you know, it was a short notice. I was playing the night right after, and I didn't want to miss my chance to do good. So I also made sure that, you know, mentally I was prepared to focus. And but yeah, like I said, it was just a dream come true. The excitement level was really high.
I gotta tell you something I haven't shared with you yet. When you got called up and it was announced, I was getting text messages from players all around the NHL. I was getting text messages from players in the American League that you played with, your teammates and former teammates. I was getting messages from your former coaches and junior. I was getting, I have never in any player that I've represented in 27 years had a client called up to the NHL and had such an overwhelming response from everybody about how happy they were for you. I mean, you're just loved out there by people you've played with, and just as significantly, people you've played against that have never played with you.
And that's, you know, that's what would even, you know, sweeter. And I received that support also, Alan, and to see how much people actually did reach out to me, you know, guys that I played against, you know, guys that I just everyone reaching out to me, telling how much, you know, how happy they are for me, and how it just meant so much. And I'm really happy to, and honored, you know, to have that impact on people, and to see, and that people see that in me, and that's a guy, and that's a guy I want to be too. So it just everything, Alan, you know, everything in the last few days. I can't be more thankful.
Well, you didn't just play three games. You also scored your first NHL goal.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, describe the play to us.
Well, look, I just closed my eyes and went to the net. like that's it. You know, I saw that, you know, there was a transition going on, and, you know, my teammate, he was carrying the puck down the wall, so just charged at the net. And, just went there hard. Just went there hard, battle, and, you know, finish strong, like I love to do when I have a chance. And I remember going around the defender and seeing that puck get slipped to the open ice right into my blade. And I remember my eyes being so big, and I was just like, oh, my God, don't miss that puck. Don't miss that puck. But when I finally saw the puck went in, that's when I don't even know. I think I kind of blacked out there for a few seconds. But once I was with all the boys, you know, they were giving me hugs and saying, congrats, you will never forget that one and everything. That's when the feeling kind of sunk in, and you can see when I'm heading back to the line there, you can see how the emotions kind of set me.
Yeah, scoring a first NHL goal is always a monumental moment, in an unforgettable moment in everybody's career. But you really, if you watch carefully and see you when you're skating back to the bench, you see at one point the emotions take over a bit and almost overwhelm you. And, you know, just seeing that look on your face and the wonder and excitement that was going through you at the time was incredibly special to see.
Absolutely, Alan. You know, all those years, you know, all those years of grind, of GMs telling you, no, you're going back to the DHL. You got to work on this. You got to work on that. And, you know, just to have that, it's just a relief too at the same time. It's just a relief. And like I said, just motivation for more.
Did you ever give up? Did you ever say to yourself, well, maybe I'm never going to play a game in the NHL. Maybe I'm just going to be a career American League player, or did you always have the belief that you would break through?
No, I always had that belief that I was going to break through. That's no doubt in my mind. Even when I was sent down to the East Coast, you know, even though I was, you know, a couple leagues away, you know, my character was still the same. My belief was still the same. How I felt about myself was still the same. So I knew, you know, You don't know it's going to happen. Obviously, you want that to happen, but I kind of knew too it was going to happen, because I knew I was not going to give up.
When I saw you score the goal, right away, they showed your family in the crowd who were at the game cheering you on. So what was that like, knowing that they were there to see it live?
That's so, yeah. Alan, like I said, too many great feelings was going on, and just for them to be, you know, they missed the first game because of flight complications, you know, and obviously I believe in myself, so I'm like, oh, maybe I'm gonna have the first goal in the first game, you know, but good thing that they missed it, and they made it to the second night, and that's when I scored the goal, and yeah, it just a cherry on top.
So you had your mom and dad and your two sisters at the game.
Yes, mom and dad and two of my sisters, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Alan, I got to ask you because you've seen this a few times in your years in the NHL. When you've got a client like Boco, who's worked so hard for so long, and something like that happens, family's there. What are your feelings? How do you feel as an agent?
Well, you feel incredibly proud, and you revel in the moment. You feel the same joy for the family, and for your client. You really do. It's a incredibly gratifying moment seeing somebody that you care about experiencing, you know, such a momentous event that you know they will remember for the rest of their lives. So it's really you feel almost overwhelmed yourself watching it happen, you know, before your eyes.
And I mean, you know, Boco, I think what's so amazing about this, obviously, is the fact that the two of you hooked up, because Alan's a guy who likes to fight for his guys. You're a guy who, like, you're a team player. You like to fight for your guys. I got to ask how you guys even got connected in the first place, because obviously they came on a little in the last year and a half. Am I correct in that?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, you know, everybody knows who's Alan Walsh is. There's no doubt. There's no doubt in that. No, but is he
visible? Is Alan Walsh a known quantity around the league, or?
I think yes.
Does he have something to say? It's weird. I don't know. I've never heard of him. Never had an opinion on anything.
Oh yeah, and he has represented a lot of my teammates, a lot of my friends. So obviously, I knew him without, you know, really getting a chance to meet him or, you know, talk to him or anything like that. But you know, this past summer, I decided to reach out. I wanted to work with Alan, and I'm more than happy that he took me in, and he's been treating me as like I was a top client, and so it's been good ever since. And I'm just more than happy.
Do you remember that first phone call, Alan?
Sure. It was in the summer, and I gave Boco a call, and he explained to me a little bit about where he was in his career, and talked a little bit about his contract that was up, and sort of we had a good discussion about his career goals. I clearly saw a player and a person who believed in himself and was incredibly passionate about the game of hockey. I had heard a lot about Boco from my clients, and I knew how loved he was in the room by the players that he played with. I knew how respected and feared he was by players he played against. I was honored that he reached out, and, you know, we had a good 45 minute to 1 hour conversation to start things off, and we took it from there.
Wow. So pretty successful first year, I'd say. And Boco, you know, playing your first few games, do you remember what it was like, you know, to put on that the jersey for the first time in the NHL? And did Alan send you any text messages? Because apparently he's known for shooting people a text that gets you really fired up before your first game.
Oh, yeah. We've talked with Alan. I think he just let me – everyone kind of let me enjoy my moment. Like I said, it was really a short notice, but I did have a text from Alan, but in my mind, everything was already set. I didn't need an extra text to fire me up. That was it. I was getting my shot, and I was just going through a wall. Yeah.
Yeah. What I like to do in that situation is not take the momentousness of the moment too seriously and lighten it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I think I sent Boco a message like, do me a favor and don't kill anyone tonight,
oh, or
something like that. And you know, I know Boko was laughing on the other side, and I think he sent me back a message, something like, "I can't promise you anything."
Incredible.
You know, so that was a lot of fun. And I heard, without mentioning names, no names, that in one of your three games, there was a player on the ice from one of the opposing teams who's fairly high profile and fairly well known for being physical, who Boko may have challenged at some point, who stood down and made a comment to one of Boko's teammates about how there is no way in the world he was going to fight Boko. So that was, I got a good, when somebody called me and told me that story, I got a good chuckle out of it. I was like, you know what? That guy is a pretty smart guy. Yeah. So Boko, let's talk a little bit about off the ice and away from the game. What would you say are your top interests away from actually playing about hockey or thinking about hockey?
Yeah, I will go. My top interest, I will go for sure. My family, no doubt. I have to say, my family, no doubt. So whenever we have a chance to just all be together, spend some time together, make memories, you know, that's what I like to do. And we are just trying to, you know, enjoy that as much as I can. And yeah.
And what about other things aside from family? Any other top interests for you, hobbies off the ice?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, you know, let's say I go into summer for sure. Like a good round of golf. It's always nice. Nice afternoon, you know, after working out, you know, getting a chance to do that. I'm also a big sports fan in general too. I enjoy watching or, you know, going to a lot of sporting events and just, you know, digging more into the sporting world, I would say.
So if Alan and I were to go golfing with you, how competitive would you be?
So I'm more of like the entertainer.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So I shoot about 100. I shoot about 100. But
it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But I make sure, you know, there's some drinks and a lot of laughs.
Yeah, that is pretty good. 100 is pretty good. I'm usually a guy who goes through lots of different golf clubs in a day. I'm breaking, you know, my driver by the third tee, and the putter is gone by the fifth hole.
Mm-hmm.
Something is always flying out of my hands accidentally, of course.
Putting with the wedge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm the opposite. Everything is a good shot for me. As long as I hit the ball, it's a good shot for me and I'm celebrating. So we're the opposite.
Boko, you know, the story that you have is inspirational for a lot of reasons. And, you know, I'm sure the last week and a half's felt a bit like dreamland for you. Like it's just been probably you've been floating on cloud nine. Have you had the chance to really soak in what's going on? Has this really become real for you yet?
I mean, not really, because, you know, tomorrow game against Nashville, for me, that's like me getting my first game just over again. I want to keep proving who Boko Imama is, and I'm just in the, you know, I'm pretty much focused on the work that I have to do. And I feel like, you know, maybe when the summertime will hit and I'll be back home with some family, you know, around some barbecue time, maybe I'll get to enjoy the last few days. But right now it's, I'm pretty much still focused on what's coming next.
I love that.
Yeah. And talk to us a little bit about some of the challenges that some players might face playing in Arizona or any other place where the weather's warm. I know the weather's pretty warm right now in Phoenix. You know, not necessarily traditional hockey weather. What's that been like for you?
I've been pretty lucky in my throughout my professional season. Even when I was with the LA Kings system, got to live in California. It's beautiful weather too, having the nice palm trees and the all the good stuff. And it's like Arizona. It's I think it's even warmer than California. The heat is really serious, so you got to be ready to drink a lot of water. You got to take care of yourself too. Distraction wise, you also got to be careful, right? When it's nice out every day and people are out and enjoying yourself, but you got to get ready for games. But all in all, I just love it. I love it out here in the West, and I feel lucky to play here.
What's your favorite city on the road?
I really enjoy coming to Arizona, actually. but for us in our division, I'll have to say Vegas.
Mm. Also, yeah. do you miss? You don't miss the winters at all, do you?
No. I don't miss the winter at all.
I always felt like I talked to Alan about it too, and I'm the only one that's living in a winter climate of the three of us on this podcast right now. And Alan likes to tell me, Boco, every time we talk, what the temperature is in LA, just so I know, especially in mid-January. So I don't think I'd miss the winter either. As much as I love a rink, I think it's got to be kind of cool to leave the hockey rink and walk out and have the sunshine like it is behind you right now.
Oh, it's nice. It's nice. Just shorts and flip-flops. And you just go about your business. So that's what I really like. It's like on practices. You just have 3-4 hours in the morning of hard work, of focus, and then you get to enjoy the rest of the day.
Yep. Well, listen, Boco, it's been amazing having you here. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time. Really enjoyed everyone getting to know you a little bit more. And it's been an incredible last week. You've got another game tomorrow. And then what will probably be a very interesting off season for us together. So thank you very much again.
Alan, thanks to you. And thank you, Adam, for the show also.
Well, it's great to see the good guys win, Boco. And good luck tomorrow. Good luck this summer. And I hope this isn't the last time. Let's have you on again next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll try to have good performance to see you guys on here. Okay.